Hello. What follows is a conversation with the Canadian historian Barry Goff. Barry Goff is one of Canada's premier historians and biographers. Over the course of his five-decade-long career, he has published 22 books on maritime and naval history, including a biography of Sir Alexander Mackenzie titled First Across the Continent, a history of early Spanish-British relations in the Pacific Northwest titled Juan de Fuca Strait, Voyages in the Waterway of Forgotten Dreams, and, most recently, an exploration of the Nuuk-Kanaalth First Nations land claim on Mears Island titled Possessing Mears Island. Barry holds a bachelor's degree from the University of British Columbia, a master's degree from the University of Montana, and a PhD in history from King's College London. He is one of Canada's most prolific historians, whose work is widely seen to have recasted and reaffirmed the imperial foundations of Canadian history. He's an outstanding academic, a fascinating interviewee, so I hope you enjoyed this conversation.
The story of and tale and times of Simon Fraser are really quite remarkable in the history of British Columbia and indeed of the whole North American West. Here was a young person who, like many other in its times, went quickly to the West on assignment. The distance these people followed is quite extraordinary. And remember, it was done by canoe or overland portage. Horses were seldom available in the far west until such time as they were introduced. And that's in the 1830s and 1840s. A few pertinent biographical details are of interest with respect to Fraser. Now, it has been said, of course, that the Scots dominated the Canadian fur trade. In the case of several of these persons, they may have come from Scottish backgrounds. Simon Fraser is an example of that. Alexander Henry of Senior comes from Elizabethtown, New Jersey, but he's also of Scottish background, as is his nephew, Alexander Henry the Younger. The fourth person in this category was a bona fide American colonial, and his name was Daniel Harmon. And Harmon and Fraser worked in close conjunction. But Simon Fraser was, although he was born in what was then an enlarged version called New York State, if you look at biographies, you'll find that he's often referred to as from Bennington, Vermont. And that's true now. He was born there in the year 1776. His mother and his father were both Scots. His father was in a loyalist regiment and was injured in the War of the American Revolution. Fraser entered the Northwest Company service at the age of 16. He was brilliant at mathematics and clerking. And in 1802, he became a partner in the firm of the Northwest Company. After 1804, and in union with rivals headed by Alexander Mackenzie, he was sent into the North Central British Columbia. Now, just imagine being a young person sent on assignment from Fort William, head of Lake Superior, and be told, you're going to the far distant part of the world. We know where it is. Alexander Mackenzie's been there already. We know about the Peace and the Parsnip River. We know about Tatoosh-Tessy, this great river that's supposed to go to the Columbia. And we want you to go out there and not only do some exploration there, but we want you to set up a number of posts because exploration and trade went hand in hand. And there was this fight going on among the old Scottish Nor'westers in Montreal as to whether exploration was a traveling holiday or not. They wanted to make sure that those people were doing their job and opening up new trade. So, business and pleasure had to go hand in hand in this way. So, they had to pay as you go, I think is the current terminology. So young Simon Fraser, who's on the rise, he's very strong physically. He's a muscular, rotund-looking fellow. We never see him smiling. He doesn't seem to be very happy. In fact, he has a characteristic which is rather jealous of Mackenzie. And he writes on several occasions about Mackenzie missing things that he, Fraser, should have been found along the way. And biographies of Fraser tend to point out that he seems to have had a curmudgeonly characteristic, or seems to have wanted to take credit away from Mackenzie when credit was due to the great Pathfinder. This goes on in the history of exploration all the time. Who was first? Who deserves the credits? Why did I discover this when my precursor missed it, who should have seen it? And it's sort of a braggadocio among these people. I'm not sure it's just a Scottish trait, but it seems to have exerted itself very strongly with Simon Fraser. He was a thruster. He wanted to be first. He wanted to be recognized. He wanted to be extremely well known. And indeed, of course, he does become well known. He was known to Alexander Mackenzie, and he was known to David Thompson, who I regard, and many also regard, as the finest of the explorers of the fur routes and the rivers of the far west. And it will come elsewhere into the study of the Columbia River. But in any event, Fraser went to Rocky Mountain House, which is an old post on the east side of the, on the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. And then from there, he pressed through, up through the Peace River. And by the year 1805, he was at a place called McLeod Lake, where Fort McLeod was built. And then to Fort St. James on Stewart Lake, that's in the year 1806, to Fort Fraser Lake in the year 1806, and then to Fort George in the year 1807. And that's where the Fraser and the Nechaco rivers converge. All of these places, the four of them, were built under his direction. It's an extraordinary development, and it won a year, almost won a year, and the distances are not small by any account. And so he opens up this whole interior northern British Columbia heartland, from what is now Prince George up north, another several hundred miles up to, say, Watson Lake and beyond. And he scratches his head and he says, well, what shall we call this? And his mother had given him a description of what Scotland was like. And Scotland's name is Caledonia in the Latin. And so young Simon says, well, I think Mum was right. So let's call it New Caledonia. And that's how the name got to be put on our maps of that particular period of time. It's a huge basin of interlocking rivers and streams, divided, of course, by mountain ranges, separated one from another by difficult portages. And as one historian puts it, the connection between one post and another had to be built through a track, and fur traders had to lay down a road or trail in order to provide a link there. And this person says it was the first highway in British Columbia. I think that's a bit of a stretch myself, but it does point out the fact that there was geographical complications in the setting up of these particular locations. Now, let's think in wider terms here, please. He had come all the way from Montreal. Montreal was the basis of the Northwest Company trade. Montreal was the big link between the oceanic commerce on the one hand to Europe, and supplies came in that way, and then furs went out that way. And from Montreal upriver to the Grand Portage, which is the big summer meeting rendezvous place, and from there into the great links of the northern routes that went over to, well, to right to Rocky Mountain House, which is up on the upper reaches of the Athabasca River. So this was a huge way of distance, and Eric Morse put together a wonderful book on the fur routes of Canada, fur trade routes of Canada, which is worth everybody's attention. He's dead now, sadly, but he was the first person. He's not an academic, but he was one of those wonderful Canadians who you know, explored the rivers of Canada. I was interested in the portages and the canoes and the First Nations alliances and what they were trading and so forth. Anyway, Fraser was, in effect, to this point in time, was really following Mackenzie and what Mackenzie had done. But then beyond this point, all into the area of New Caledonia, as I previously described, this was all new to him. At exactly the same time that he was doing this, in 1803, the United States purchased Louisiana. Now, that was a province in the central portion of what's now the central United States. And they purchased it from Napoleon. It had previously been owned by Spain. The northern reaches of Louisiana actually tucked north of the 49th parallel. So this becomes an increasingly interesting point. Louisiana was the watershed draining south to the Mississippi River. So the upper reaches of Louisiana bore on the question of whether or not they went across on the 49th parallel. The 49th parallel was the imagined boundary at that time, but it wasn't finally laid down until 1818. Going back to the story, the Americans under President Thomas Jefferson. Now, Jefferson had arranged the Louisiana Purchase, and he decides that it's a very good thing to send an expedition, a corps of American explorers, an official party headed up by none other than Captain Lewis and Captain Clark. And their story is very famous because by November of 1805, they're right at the mouth of the Columbia River, and they make their return to Washington. And the story then of a transcontinental passage is being established. This has a big effect upon the Canadians and the Northwest Company, because they're, well, if the Americans can get there so quickly, isn't this going to threaten our trade? This is one of the reasons why Fraser is sent, and it's in the background of all of this. Meanwhile, the Scots in the Northwest Company can't get along with one another. And as has been pointed out, that the old Northwest Company consisted of a lot of old Scottish chieftains and chief families who didn't see eye to eye with one another. Remember, back in Scotland, the revolution was going on in terms of agriculture and the control of the commons areas, and the closing down of the Crofter settlements. And this is the reason why Alexander Mackenzie came to North America, because of the difficulties that existed in Stornoway and the Isle of Lewis. So the fights among the Scots were quite pronounced. And indeed, in North America, Northern North America, in Fraser's time, coming right down to Sir George Simpson's time, the parading of a display of power of the old Scottish barons was to be part of the social commentary of Canada. There's a wonderful description of Sir George Simpson being led into Fort St. James with a piper and drums, and a full display was made to give the impression to the traders, their wives and children, and also to the First Nations who were engaged in the trade and in the work and the laboring force there at Fort St. James, of the display of the might and majesty of Scotland's Northwest Company. The fight between the Northwest Company on the one hand and a renegade group called the XY Company becomes part of the big problem. And Alexander Mackenzie, Sir Alexander Mackenzie by this time, is by no means a happy camper, if I can use a common term of today. And he doesn't think that he's been given his proper due. In Montreal, there's a fight that goes on between himself and Simon McTavish, another powerful member of the Northwest Company syndicate. And so Mackenzie says, all right, I'm going to set up this separate company. And by the way, I'm going back to Scotland because the heat is too big here in Montreal for the fur traders. So this is an extraordinary corporate background fight that's going on behind the scenes, just at the same time as Simon Fraser is making his establishing his forts west of the continental divide. What else to say? A young philanthropically minded Lord Selkirk buys some property, a large postage stamp size property, I think 66,000 acres, I believe it is, square miles, in southern Manitoba, going over into the North Dakota border.
I hope you've enjoyed this conversation with Barry Goff. If you would like to support the Canada History Society, please consider donating using the link in the description below or by visiting canadahistorysociety.ca, where there should be a donation tab at the top of the website. With your support, we hope to produce more interviews with notable Canadian academics. So thank you for watching, and we will see you next time.